the 2019 election was seen by some as a rejection of action on climate change. But I think that's the wrong message to take out of 2019. And I think even though the ACT is a small jurisdiction, I think it continues to demonstrate the power of the issue of climate change at the ballot box. All political parties, even the Liberals here in the ACT, were attempting to brand themselves as somewhat green.
One for Mum, one for Dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasurer.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and today we're talking about the recent Canberra election results, which saw the Labor government, led by Andrew Barr, re-elected after a whopping 18 years in office. And it also saw a big swing to the ACT Greens, led by Shane Rattenbury. There are three seats hanging in the balance as of the count today.
Some smoke, fires, hail and a pandemic-induced recession. It's been an election year like no other for the ACT.
Labor will govern for four more years in the ACT after a resounding victory.
It has been in power since 2001.
Extending their reign to 23 years in government.
And it was a very big night for the ACT Greens too.
It was an outcome no one really saw coming.
The Greens, they were the real stars of last night, so they've increased their presence in the legislature.
Doubling the numbers they had during the last term of government.
The Liberal leader was forced to resort to other creative photo opportunities to cut through.
Tonight marks the end of a tough campaign in a tough year.
And in 2020, Canberrans have voted to return a Labor government.
2020 has been a year where there has not been a lot of good news, but tonight bucks that trend. Tonight, Canberra has voted for a better normal.
Even though the ACT is a smaller jurisdiction, it often gets overlooked, but it plays a leadership role on so many policy issues nationally. And so today we wanted to unpack why the results in the ACT election are significant nationally and what it's going to mean for our public policy debate going forward. And today I'm delighted to be talking to Ben Oquist, Executive Director of the Australia Institute, and we're recording this on Wednesday, the 21st of October, 2020, and things may have changed since recording. G'day, Ben.
G'day, Emily. Lovely to be here.
So, Ben, tell me, firstly, what are the overall results and what was there anything unexpected that came out of election night?
Well, I guess the big thing was that the Labor government had been in power for such a long time and a minority government for a large chunk of that 18 or 19 years as well. And most people expected there'd be a big it's time factor that would see the government tossed out eventually. You know, six elections on the trot, you'd expect a change of government. So that's the big thing. And I thought the big take out of it was essentially the electorate backed sensible economic reform and rejected lazy economics.
Yeah, so just to pick up on that in a bit more detail, anyone who lived in Canberra would have seen there was a massive advertising blitz, as there always is, but the Liberals' line was lower taxes, better services. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, indeed. The leader, Alistair Coe, of the Liberal Party here, if he was anything, he was relentlessly on message. You'd have to give him credit for that.
Absolutely.
We had that slogan everywhere.
We have a fresh vision to make Canberra the best place to live, work and raise a family. For lower taxes and better services, vote Liberal.
Some of our listeners and you and me, Eb, there's a bit of cognitive dissonance, but it was everywhere. He had it on his boxing gloves, he had it on billboards, he had it on posters, he had it on brick walls, he was knocking down Boris Johnston style. He was on message with that. So if the election was anything, it was a referendum on that slogan. And you'd have to say the electorate rejected it. So often we hear that all sides of politics need to balance the books and you need to be economically efficient and good at sound economic managers. But here was one side of politics saying to the electorate, you can have it all. You can have lower taxes and better services. And of course, we know intuitively that you need a strong revenue base to pay for things. And I think essentially the electorate backed sensible economics against that kind of fantasy economics. Not just on that slogan, but more broadly, the other big debate that's been going around in Canberra for a long time is tax reform.
Yeah, and particularly, I guess, when we're seeing such big upheaval in the economic space at the moment with the recession, people are paying more attention to all of these types of policies. But you're right, for people who are outside the ACT, what has that tax debate looked like here? Because it's far more progressive than we might see in any other jurisdiction.
Yes, we've had in the ACT 6 years of debate really about tax reform and the idea of swapping stamp duty or stamp duty on housing purchases for lower stamp duty for higher land tax or kind of council rates, because we don't have a council level of government here in the ACT. This is a tax reform that is really backed by almost all economists of all stripes. Conservative governments really like the idea. The New South Wales Conservative Treasurer, Perrottet, has said that stamp duty is the most inefficient tax. John Howard, Peter Costello, all railed against stamp duty as a really inefficient tax. But here in Canberra, it's the abolishment of it over a 20-year period or the reduction over it for swapping it for higher land tax that is actually being delivered. So while it's been backed by economists of all stripes, this economic reform has been delivered by a progressive government, a centre-left government.
And so I just want to come back to the overall results and the idea that the Labor government had been in for quite a long time already. There wasn't its time factor. There wasn't a huge amount of polling around. So to a certain extent, no one really knew what it was going to be like on election night. But can you just reflect for me on the nature of the government in ACT? Because they have had Shane Rattenbury as a minister within the cabinet. It's a model that perhaps hasn't worked as successfully in other places, perhaps outside Tasmania. It's certainly got much more longevity than anywhere else. What's your observations on why that relationship has worked and been rewarded by the electorate?
Well, first of all, politicians kind of forced into it here in Canberra. It's a proportional representation system, a Hare Clark system, more similar to the New Zealand system, where they often have coalition governments as well. You've seen Jacinda Ardern being re-elected there after a long period in minority government. She's likely to have the ability to form a majority government, even if she does go into coalition. So it's that style of government that gets put in place because of the voting system. But I do think that style of government has actually worked not as a handbrake on reform, but has allowed reform to happen. That kind of government, that type of voting system drives cooperation between political parties. There's always healthy competition, but that type of voting system, that style of government drives cooperation. And that cooperation can lead to kind of more lasting reforms because you have to get more people on board to get them up. And I think there are a number of examples here in the ACT of that. Now, I've mentioned that land tax reform. Now, that was bitterly opposed by the Liberals, but the Greens and Labor did it together. But actually the Parliament, although there's only two parties together ruling it, has actually in a bipartisan, tripartisan fashion backed in a lot of reforms that don't get traction nationally. I'll pick two for you. Truth in political advertising reform was put in place here in the ACT almost in the caretaker period, backed by all sides of politics. Now, at a federal level, you're struggling to get anyone to back it. It seems very controversial.
Yeah.
But here you've got the Liberals, Labor and the Greens putting in place truth in political advertising reform. On the climate and energy front, the ACT has a 100% renewable energy target delivered in 2020. Now, in the end, all three political parties have backed that reform too. So I think there's something about that voting system that can drive cooperation, that can drive not just bipartisan, but sometimes tripartisan agreement that can lead to enduring reforms.
Mm.
You voted for a government that does what it says it will do. We built light rail, we've opened nurse-led walk-in centres across Canberra, and we've delivered 100% renewable electricity for our city.
asking you. The ACT has come a long way. We are one of the elite jurisdictions on the planet when it comes to reducing our emissions, but we cannot stop. Now is the moment to underline the fact that gas is another fossil fuel and we need to wean our city off it. We need to tackle our transport emissions and we need to be very clear to the federal government that we don't want a gas-led recovery. We want a renewables-led recovery.
And so just picking up a little bit on climate and energy policy there, we've obviously got 100% renewables, but they also had great success with investment in public transport like the light rail. Just skipping ahead, how important is the ACT going to be to the national climate debate, do you think?
I think it's really important. It's a small jurisdiction. Most people don't know what goes on in the Canberra bubble, and maybe Scott Morrison's derision of it kind of sends people away. But it can be a trailblazer in reform. It's now got the most ambitious emissions reduction target in the country. It's a net zero by 2045 plan. They've delivered that 100% renewable energy target on time, and now they're going for more. And it can play a leadership role that can drive other states to do it. While all states have committed to net zero by 2050 at least, the ACT has gone a little better by 2045, and I think that will drive the debate in that direction. During the election campaign, Andrew Barr promised to build the country's, in fact, one of the planet's biggest batteries, a virtual battery system. And as you said, at the last election before this one, we had a big debate about building light rail, and that infrastructure, and that was bitterly contested, but again has been delivered successfully, and it shows you can deliver public transport infrastructure on time successfully and it be embraced by the community.
I feel like it's the ACT is really the only other place in Australia outside perhaps Tasmania from time to time where we've seen Greens in the cabinet and Greens in government, Greens with ministerial positions. Shane Rattenbury goes to COAG back when we had a COAG. How much do you think that changes the dynamics? And do you think that people find that appealing, that they're those kinds of coalitions, you know, we see the coalition government federally with the Liberal and National Party. Do you think we're headed towards more coalition-style governments, particularly after this period of COVID where we have seen more cooperation?
Well, that's been the trend in Australian politics over the last 20 or 30 years at least. More and different political parties getting a foothold, whether it's independents, your Zali Steggles, your Helen Hayneses, or the Greens, or in South Australia, you've had Centre Alliance in Tasmania, you've had Jackie Lambie. They're all actually symptoms of a long-term trend, which is seeing even One Nation in Queensland, all part of that long-term trend that's seeing a plethora of new parties, minor parties, consolidate in the political landscape. Here in Canberra in particular, it's delivered results for the community for a number of reasons. I do think, I wrote about this in the Canberra Times today, that Andrew Barr, the leader of the Labor Party here and the Chief Minister, and Shane Rattenbury, the leader of the Greens, have been around for a long time. They're not new. They're experienced political operators and are well-trained in their craft. And I think sometimes people underestimate politics as a skill and a craft. And they've been at it for a long time. And as I said today, kind of sometimes takes a lifetime to be an overnight success. And I think that's what's happened with those two leaders. They allow each other enough space to be in a cooperation while still in competition. And getting that balance between cooperation and competition, I think, is hard for all political parties. Mm. And it takes maturity. And I think Andrew and Shane have probably got that in spades. And while individuals aren't everything, I do think their particular style and their particular skills have been a key feature in what's drove success here in Canberra.
And just again to go over the ditch, I thought it was really interesting that even though she might not need to, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern was talking about perhaps governing in coalition with the Greens.
Jacinda Ardern doesn't need the Greens this time, but they've talked.
I have said that I want to talk with the Greens and we'll do that next week. I will continue to seek to be a consensus builder. I also want straightforward arrangements for this next term of office.
Why do you think she would make a move like that if she doesn't have to?
I think two reasons, Eb. One is no political party in New Zealand before this election had ever achieved a majority government under the voting system. So she might have had the success, but she knows it's tough to do. And if she wants an enduring government, she knows she's got to build a coalition. So she might think, well, I can hold this term, but what about the next term and building an enduring coalition? Much like you alluded to before, Eb, the Liberals and the Nationals have got an enduring coalition and that produces some stability over the long term. And you might sacrifice a bit of power now for a long-term gain. I also think, again, something you alluded to earlier, Eb, that there is an appetite in the community for some more cooperation in politics rather than always just being against everything your opponent does. And so if you're seen to take on board some ideas from elsewhere, I think the community is likely to reward you. Finally, I thought it was interesting that Jacinda Ardern did not spend the election campaigning for majority government. She never said that was a goal.
That's really in contrast to how we talk about it in Australia.
It is. And I don't know if there's a chance of that playing like that in Australia, where we've just got different cultures. But there it was seen, I think, not to be power hungry.
Mm.
You were trying to do the right thing for the country and get a good result, but you weren't seen to be striving for power for you. And I think she was able to play that successfully. Whether that translates into the Australian context, we'll have to see if somebody plays it that way sometime in the future.
Yeah. And I guess just any final thoughts on the implications of the ACT election results for federal politics?
I think there are a couple. I'll go back to what I said at the beginning, that sensible economic reform can be delivered by progressive governments. And I think that's a takeout lesson that a lot of people will hear. Secondly, that voters want action on climate change. And I know the 2019 election was seen by some as a rejection of action on climate change, but I think that's the wrong message to take out of 2019. And I think even though the ACT is a small jurisdiction, I think it continues to demonstrate the power of the issue of climate change at the ballot box. All political parties, even the Liberals here in the ACT, were attempting to brand themselves as somewhat green. A lot of green paraphernalia from the Liberals here. And the last takeout message here from the ACT was that the Liberals really lost a lot of votes in the inner city there. A kind of modern Liberal heartland deserted it because they were seen as too conservative, and they were trying to counter that by appearing green and promoting a tree building program.
But the Liberals have also talked up their climate credentials, promising to plant 1 million trees over a decade.
People right across Canberra are desperate for more green space.
We spent a lot of time in Australian politics focusing on the disaffected regional voters. I think one thing that we'll hear a little bit more about is disaffected modern Liberal voters if the Liberals appear too conservative. It's why we had candidates like Tim Wilson or in the seat of Wentworth, Dave Sharma, running under the banner Modern Liberals, because they know that sometimes the Liberal branding is too conservative for the voters in their seats.
Mm. And just to recap, I guess, the current results are 10 seats to Labor, 8 seats to Liberal, 4 seats to Greens, with 3 seats hanging in the balance.
I am absolutely thrilled to have new members joining us in the Assembly.
At this stage, there's been a 3.4% swing to the Greens.
11 Labor, 5 Green, 6 Green and 8 Liberals.
The party hasn't yet secured those 6 seats, but it's sewn up 4, doubling the numbers they had during the last term.
Just a final reflection, I mean, looking at the overall primary results, it looks like there was about a roughly 3% swing against the Liberals, and it was the Greens that seemed to have picked all that up.
Yeah, it's never clear exactly where those votes have came from. Did that 3%, you're right on those figures, Eb, did that 3% directly come off the Liberals and go straight to the Greens, or did Labor pick up some of the Liberal vote and the Greens pick up some of the Labor vote? You don't know, but one thing is clear. The Liberals had a poor result, and I think it was mixed. You know, different places they went up and some places they went down, but the standout for me was that loss of Liberal vote in the key central seat here in Canberra.
I guess the federal Liberals will be keeping an eye on that, make sure it doesn't infect any other states. Thanks very much, Ben. This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so please stay tuned. And please, if you can, leave us a review on iTunes or elsewhere if you've enjoyed today's episode, as it helps people to find the podcast. Don't forget to enrol in the Australia Institute's Economics Academy, where we unpack basic economic concepts and help you to participate in the national economic debate. And that's with Richard Dennis and Matt Grudnoff, and you can find that at our website, tai.org.au. For the latest health information, you can check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. For all our latest research and content, visit tai.org.au, and we're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Ben Oquist is at Ben Oquist. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum. Keep washing those hands, wear a mask if you can, stay safe, stay 1.5 metres away, and thanks for listening.